Tony.
Hello, Canada. Today's date is February 4th, 2024. Welcome to a full edition of Canadian Common Sense, Canada's Issues, in about an hour. It is Tony in Saskatchewan.
And Lewis out here in BC.
How are you, my friend?
Not too bad. Not too bad. People keep saying that spring has come early, and I keep telling them it's the beginning of February. Like, we are going to get more snow.
Yeah, well, hey, we got some more this morning, but it has been a great week. So it was very nice and warm out here. But yeah, today is snowing and there's wind, so it's kind of a bit more typical, but warm at least.
Well, that sounds very Saskatchewan.
Exactly. All right, Canada. So we've got a few housekeeping notes to discuss right now. First of all, we had talked about Chairman Chow demanding the federal government hand out $250 million so they can deal with the refugees and homelessness in general of illegal immigrants, etc. Well, the federal government came through. Earlier in the week, Mark Miller had announced $362 million to deal with refugee housing.
Oh, look at that. 50% more than they even asked for.
Well, yes, but this Toronto's only going to get 143 of that millions.
Only
because 100 million has to go to Quebec. So that leaves, well, 119 million for the rest of the country.
Wow. Well, you know, this money wouldn't even have to be getting dished out if Trudeau wasn't in power.
Well, that's right. And I did stress the word refugee for a reason, because it seems that the government can find hundreds of millions of dollars to help refugees and illegal immigrants, but those Canadians who are already here and can't find housing, screw you!
Yeah, no, that's exactly what's happening. I mean, isn't it funny how we always can find money for certain things, but their cupboards are bare when it comes to other things?
Yeah, welfare never goes broke.
Yeah.
Okay, Justin Trudeau's self-appointed, because he appointed it himself, the interim ethics commissioner. Now, remember when Mary Dion stepped down and I can't remember who, it was Dominic LeBlanc's sister-in-law very quickly stepped down, realizing that, just a bit of a conflict. I don't even know this guy's name and I don't even care. The interim ethics commissioner has cleared Justin Trudeau of any kind of ethical wrongdoing in his Jamaican Christmas vacation. So he indeed was just like many Canadians, just staying with friends over Christmas. Nothing to see here, Canada.
Wow, congratulations, JT.
Yeah, I mean,
I don't even know what to say. I mean, obviously he was going to be found not guilty. I mean, the guy, you know what? The ethics commissioner should never be appointed by the prime minister. This goes for everything that we talk about, right? Like, I don't know how many times we've talked about different appointees and stuff like that, that we say, when it comes to like a former justice that's investigating the government on something, should never be appointed by the governing party or the prime minister. It should be appointed by the opposition parties. And same thing with the ethics commissioner. The ethics commissioner should be appointed by the opposition parties. I mean, let me think about this, because the ethics commissioner doesn't just investigate the government, they investigate all MPs. So it should be there should be a committee of all members of parliament, like that represents each party, and it should be one person that represents each party, not like a representative share of each party. So it should be like what we would propose for the Senate, you know, like an equal number per party, right? And they decide on a ethics commissioner that they all agree upon. I mean, that might be impossible in this country because nobody can agree on anything, but at least you might get somebody that is going to be impartial.
Well, and actually how you spelled it out is actually how it's supposed to work. It's supposed to work that the opposition and the governing parties together all discuss, you know, multiple candidates for the role of ethics commissioner. But like always, the Trudeau government had decided they would just do it their own way. Even when Mario Dion was appointed as the ethics commissioner, they had just said, we are appointing this person in 6 days. Do you have any problems with that? Well, it doesn't matter because we're going to appoint him anyway. The opposition is supposed to have input, but well, JT just doesn't care.
Well, and that's the point I'm trying to make, right?
Yeah.
Obviously, I mean, it shouldn't be the prime minister that appoints them, whether a committee has selected the person or not. It should be, they cannot be appointed unless appointed by the committee. That's how it should be.
Yeah. And well, just as a side note to wrap this little bit of housekeeping up, it just so happens that the interim ethics commissioner's term is about to expire, and he probably would like Justin Trudeau to appoint him to another 6 month term. So probably good that this vacation was rubber stamped so that he can get another 6 month term at his salary of $240,000 a year.
Wow. Congratulations, ethics commissioner.
Yeah. Okay. Couple more housekeeping notes. This is actually new, but the concept is old. So we're just going to cover this in housekeeping. Ontario has a new independent, air quotes, senator. Justin Trudeau recently appointed Toronto entrepreneur Mohammed Al-Zaibak to the Chamber of Sober Second Thought. I know, Canada, you're going to be surprised when you hear this, but turns out Mr. Al-Zaibak has donated throughout his adult life $76,000 to the Liberal Party of Canada. And in fact, they were even able to track donations to specific candidates in different campaigns, such as Bob Rae, Michael Ignatieff, and, oh, the MP for Papineau. Who would that be, Lewis?
I believe that would be Justin Trudeau.
As a matter of fact, it would be Justin Trudeau. How about that? Nothing to see here, folks. Let's just talk to that ethics commissioner. Nothing to see.
Yeah, okay. Good luck with that.
Yeah. Yep. And listener Bill sent in a graphic for us when we were talking about Victoria and the insanity of possibly having, well, no large trucks in downtown Victoria. And he was absolutely right. So I just want to go through some of the highlights of that graphic here. If I can just bring that up. Give me 1 second here. Essentially just said, hey, yeah, you know what, guys? If the trucks stop rolling within 24 hours, hospitals will no longer have any supplies. And within 48 hours, well, that's when your grocery stores start running out of food. And as a side note on that, Bill, you're absolutely right. If you go by your local Loblaws warehouse or Empire or Co-op out here in the West or whatnot, those warehouses only have about 3 day supply of food. So if the trucks stop rolling, well, you're going to run out of food. You're going to run out of fuel. And basically your economy comes to a grinding halt within a week. So think about that, Victoria.
Yeah, it's not a very well thought out plan. And I mean, none of these plans usually are well thought out. Let's be honest about it.
Well, yes, that is very, very true. All right. So we've got a great show ahead for you today, Canada. We were just talking before the show started. The news keeps this raining out of the sky. We have to sort of catch it and prioritize. So on the show today, Danielle Smith making the news cycle. The Woke Brigade doesn't like Danielle Smith. Catherine at the government, Tate. Bill S-209, Edmonton and the 15-minute cities, housing crisis, and more. Where do you want to start, sir?
Oh, let's start with the big news. And that would be Danielle Smith. I love her.
Yep, I got to admit, my crush on Danielle Smith has not diminished at all. So, she made an announcement, and I actually thought, well, we'll analyze it in a little bit here, but I I thought she really wasn't all that radical with said announcement, but Danielle Smith came up with a policy on transgender kids. So, I mean, New Brunswick was first out of the gate with that, just saying quite simply that trans kids cannot change their pronouns or their name without parental consent. And then Saskatchewan shortly thereafter came out with similar legislation, just stating, okay, if you are under 16, I believe it was, that you can't just change your pronouns or your gender without your parental consent. So Danielle Smith came along and has now decided to join the party, and she just laid it out. All right, look, kids, parents actually have some rights. So I've got the screenshot here.
Well, she didn't just join the party. I mean, she raised the bar. And honestly, I wish she'd gone further.
Exactly, yeah.
And most people that I have talked to, let me rephrase that. Every single person that I've talked to about this wishes that she had gone a little further. But this is a great start.
It is, and actually she's got support from the LGB part of the alphabet crowd.
Yeah.
And I saw one post on X and I thought it spelled it out pretty well. And it said LGB equals sexual orientation, T plus alphabet equals mental illness. And I just thought, well, that's kind of harsh, but it's not entirely wrong.
No. And I mean, I fully support everything that she has laid out in this plan. And like I said, I wish she'd gone a little further, but the number of people that I have seen who have come out in support of this, who are part of the alphabet group is unbelievable, actually. Like I was really surprised by it. But when you start reading their reasoning for it, it all makes sense.
Yeah, it really does. And I'm like you. I thought she could have gone farther as well. I thought she was actually pretty down the middle in a lot of what she was talking about. And I did watch her entire press conference because, well, she's Danielle Smith and I love her. So, and I, but yeah, I thought she actually was quite measured in this policy.
I cannot stress enough how fairly mild these rules are.
Yeah.
I mean, I think the ages could have been raised. I think that I think that there could have been just a full-on complete ban of hormone therapy and puberty blockers until the age of 18. I don't think that there should have been any like caveat carved out for parental consent below that age. Like I think that it should have just had a straight up ban. Like I think she could have went further, but I think that these measures, there is nothing, absolutely nothing controversial about this.
No, in fact, I saw lots of posts on X from people across the country in BC, Ontario, New Brunswick, and I even saw some from right here in Saskatchewan, actually, all saying, I want her as our premier.
Yeah. And, yeah. I know lots of people here have told me the same thing.
So, so what's so controversial here? Well, let's just read out what Danielle Smith has in store. So, number one, and I just screenshotted this off her own post on X. Transgender top and bottom surgery is banned for minors age 17 and under in Alberta. Number two, puberty and hormone blockers banned for those aged 15 and under. Those aged 16 or 17 require parental consent. Number three, parental notification and an opt-in requirement will be required for each instance a school teacher intends to give formal instruction on gender, sexual orientation, or human sexuality. Number four, for minors aged 15 and under, parental notification and consent will be required for any change in name or pronouns. For minors aged 16 or 17, parental notification for name or pronoun changes is required. Number five, the Alberta government will work with sporting organizations to ensure biological women and girls have the choice to compete in athletic competitions in a women-only division without any trans-identifying males. Danielle, will you marry me? Oh, crap, I'm already married.
I didn't hear a single controversial thing there.
No, exactly. I mean, I thought, especially number five, I mean, let girls compete against girls in sports and not get their heads kicked in by trans girls.
Yeah, well, and hey, did you see who the very first or a news organization was to try and find fault with that one? I mean, I sent you the article. Wasn't it Global News?
Yes, you did. Yep.
Yeah, Global News did a thing on this already. Like it was almost instantaneous. It was like they had the article ready to go. Like, and it was this real, it's a terrible article. Like you read it, it does not compute. And it's all about how male athletes that start taking testosterone blockers, that within 2 years, they're no better than the average female athlete. And which is a pile of crap. I mean, we've seen instance after instance of trans women who just annihilate their true female. Like I hate the term cisgender. I hate that term. They're normal women, a competition. Like they just absolutely annihilate them.
Yeah. So I just pulled the article up here, and thank you, Global News. Adam Toy. What a great name for a reporter on this particular issue.
Yeah. He's a tool, not a toy.
Exactly. yeah, you're right. He must have had this ready to go because it was very quickly out there. And he said, Smith suggested a trans athlete has advantages over their cisgender counterparts. And so then he says, the scientific literature disagrees even with the existence of high-profile cases. And he doesn't talk about any of these high-profile cases, by the way. Instead, he goes on and talks about a person in South Africa who was questioned about her athletic performance and higher testosterone levels.
Yeah.
And she was born with a intersex condition where she was female but happened to have the XY chromosomes.
Yeah.
And
so it's completely irrelevant to this conversation.
Exactly. Yeah. And that's, of course, the first person he brings up. And the article is basically about her.
Yeah.
And then I'm going right down to the end here, and he's not bringing up any other examples of where there's trans athletes who are not completely dominating in women's sports. And instead, yeah, he says, though there's little scientific understanding about how hormone replacement therapy affects the athletic ability of trans women athletes. It's like, well,
that's BS.
Total BS.
There is so much scientific evidence of how testosterone affects like athletic performance. I mean, you look at in Massachusetts for like 3 years in a row, the first and second place female wrestlers in the state were trans female. They were males who were identifying as females, and they won first and second in the state championships in wrestling 3 years in a row. The Leah Thomas, who as a man was rated like 240 some position in the NCAA rankings, and as a female is far and away number one, like not even close.
Yeah, he's smashing records.
Yeah, rewrote the record book for the women's division, right? And which should never have happened, by the way. Yeah. Female or trans female powerlifters, just destroying the competition. And I mean, like, let's be real here. You don't even have to do hormone therapy or even have the surgery to be able to compete in these, in the female division. All you have to do is say that you identify as a woman and you are admitted into the female division. So let's not even pretend that they require that you do hormone therapy to be in here. Like, who was it? There's a Christian rapper by the name of Zuby. He's from, I think he grew up, or he spent a lot of time in England, but I believe he was born in the US. He, for one day, he decided to identify as a woman. And then he went and broke all the powerlifting records. And so, I mean, this is just getting absolutely insane. And the media trying to find, like, obscure examples. I don't have to find obscure examples. I can pull all these examples off the top of my head because they're right there in front of our faces every day. We can see them. We don't need to go searching for them. We don't need to pretend that they don't exist because they're right there in front of us. We can see them. And I mean, this happens. I mean, what was it? Even Serena Williams. Remember when Serena Williams was asked if she would be interested in playing the male tennis champion in a battle of the sexes. And she said, I couldn't even play against the number 200th ranked man. He would beat me 6-love, 6-love, 6-love. Like, she said he would beat me in straight sets without me scoring a point. Yeah. And she's right. I mean, her training partner when she was playing was like a non-ranked or a really, really late ranked player. So 200 plus, right? And he would beat her on the regular. Now, that doesn't take away from the fact that she is the greatest female tennis player, or the second greatest female tennis player of all time. I still think Martina Navratilova is the greatest of all time. But
I'd agree with that.
Yep. She is the second greatest female tennis player of all time. And she would never stand a chance against a very, very, very low ranked male player.
Yeah. I mean, only our older listeners would remember this, but like Chris Everett Lloyd, who was also one of the greatest female players back in the 80s, trained with her brother-in-law, who was not even ranked, and she couldn't beat him. So
yeah,
so
you're right. And this does not take away from the fact that they are the greatest female players ever, because they are. And they're, and honestly, and I think I've said this on the show before, I'd rather watch the female tennis matches over the male tennis matches anyway, not because they're better to look at, but because there's more rallies. It's not just a smash, a smash fest like it is with the men, right? Like, how many aces do you see in a men's match as opposed to a women's match, right? There's so many like one shot points. Like, it's just serve point, serve point, serve return point. Right. Like, it's not a fun game to watch. The women's division is actually quite entertaining to watch because of all the rallies. And so, I mean, this does not take away from the fact that these are the greatest women of in their sport ever, because they are. Yeah. It's just, let's be real about this. Let's be honest about this.
Yeah, and it's funny, this article from Global that you had sent over, the fellow even talks about, oh, you know, after 2 years of being on hormone therapy, the differences between men and women are completely gone. And again, brings up a fitness assessment to compare men and women doing push-ups and sit-ups. It's like, well, I don't think it's the push-up championships of America that are being dominated by trans women right now and getting more attention for things like, you say, swimming and powerlifting, wrestling, mixed martial arts, for example. And
yeah, let's look at sports where the size of your hands matter, the size of your feet matter, like swimming, because like it's the size of your hands and the size of your feet, the broadness of your shoulders that makes a real difference in how a person slides through the water and how like with the size of their hands, how much water they can push when they're swimming. Right. Same thing with their feet, the size of their feet for kicking. You're going to be able to generate more velocity with just the size, because your hands, your feet are bigger, your hips are narrower, and you produce less drag than a woman, right? So I mean, like there's so many other advantages. It's not just strength, you know, like you see the shape or the way men's hips articulate as opposed to the way women's hips articulate. That is a factor in wrestling and jiu-jitsu and mixed martial arts. And you've got all kinds of different things that men's bodies and women's bodies do differently. And that's why, like, say in, floor gymnastics, for example, women excel at that more than men. And it's all because of the way their bodies move as opposed to the way a man's body moves. And also the fact that women are, on the average, much smaller than men, right? So they can do these maneuvers and things that men can't do. So, you know, like, are we going to have like a women moving over to men's divisions for sports where they actually can do better because they're smaller, right? And they can do things that men can't do because they're smaller.
I guess so. That maybe that's the next progression. But so Danielle Smith, surprisingly enough, has gotten just a little bit of pushback from the usual suspects in the woke brigade.
Oh, just a little.
So there was an X post that I had seen, and it said, notice how it's only CBC and CTV are only bringing out people from the trans community who are dudes wanting to be women. And one picture was of this person that had spoken at a YWCA event in Regina and who completely looks like a dude, still has his junk, as one of the pictures was quite apparent showing. And yeah, just basically a dude with long red hair speaking for the trans community. And they've trouted a few of these out. One in particular, I just have to highlight because this person organized a rally in Calgary yesterday, and I'm not sure how many people came out to said rally, but Rachel Notley was right there with her, air quotes, Karla Marx.
Of course, Rachel Notley was there.
Of course she was. She was with Karla Marx. Now, Karla Marx, and I'm reading right from Karla Marx's X profile, a trans femme communist drag comrade with she, her pronouns, of course. So, Karla Marx decided to organize a rally, a call to action, rally to protect trans kids. It was yesterday, Saturday, February 3rd, 2 till 4 p.m. at the City Hall Municipal Building on McLeod Trail in Calgary. Defend trans non-binary identities in schools. So I don't know how many people were there with Karla Marx, other than Rachel Notley, of course. But hey, anybody from Calgary, let us know if you were there.
do these idiots understand that if Karla Marx decided to go to, oh, I don't know, communist Russia or communist China or communist North Korea and espouse her, and dress as a drag queen and all of these things, would they survive 24 hours before the government decided to oh, I don't know, put a bullet in their head.
Or at the very least, throw them in jail, right?
Yeah, well, at very least, but they would likely get the death penalty wherever in a communist country.
Oh, absolutely right. Yep.
Like, so what the... I don't understand this. It's like I don't understand the whole Queers for Palestine thing either, because like every single one of those people would get thrown off the roof of a building in Palestine. Like, how... I don't understand how these people support ideologies that hate them.
Yeah, well, that's exactly it. So, well, speaking of the hate, you had pointed out to me, and you actually sent over a couple of articles, whatnot, that the Liberal Party of Canada, particularly one blowhard MP from Edmonton that you know a lot better than I do, was, just completely beside himself.
Oh, Randy Boissonneau. Yeah. That guy, oh my God, I can't say enough bad things about that guy. He's... well,
him and Marcy Ian, right?
Yeah, him and Marcy Ian. And you might remember Marcy Ian if you're old enough and you used to watch Canada AM. She was on Canada AM back in the day. And so she made a claim. Marcy made a claim that her and Randy were up all night consoling children over this. Now, first of all, there isn't a child in the country that's going to call their MP to be consoled. Okay.
Oh, no, there was several. Randy Boissonneau said he received several calls.
From children?
Oh, of course. Because children are going to call their MP. Adults don't even call their MP, for crying out loud.
Exactly. Exactly. Adults don't even call. Why would children? I mean, children don't even know what an MP is. Let's be honest. Adults in Canada barely know what an MP is.
Yeah.
So, yeah, they spent all night consoling children over this. And I'm like, really? Seriously? You know, I can't even. I mean, you don't lie, because as soon as you lie, and it's an obvious lie, like this is so painfully obvious, because Randy Boissonneau wouldn't console anybody. you just completely demolish your own argument or your own position on this. Like, I've always said, you know, like, if you believe that the truth is bad enough, then you don't need to lie, right? So if they believe that this legislation in Alberta is bad enough, then don't lie about it. Like, because all you do is diminish your side when you lie, because people find out you're lying and they go, I can't trust what this person says at all. Like, you, that's, and if you keep lying, and I mean, you don't even have to find out that they're lying. You just know they're lying as soon as they lie, because they're really bad at it.
Well, Randy Boissonneau is a master at this, and this isn't his first rodeo at it. When Danielle Smith was talking about the power grid and saying, well, if Stephen Guilbeault is going to impress these power standards on us, maybe we need a provincial government power regulator who can step in and create that new generation. Randy Boissonneau said she wants to nationalize Alberta's power grid. And then when Danielle Smith was speaking with Tucker Carlson, when he was in, that was when, oh, and Danielle Smith is bringing this far right transphobe bigot to Edmonton Center. And I mean, the guy is just a... yeah, he's a blowhard, and he's got zero credibility.
Yeah, and he's a bit unhinged and always has been. I mean, he's the guy that during the investigations into SNC-Lavalin, when they were going to be voting on, I forget what the vote was. It was to get certain transcripts or communications or something like that. I can't remember what it was, but there was a vote that was supposed to happen on the committee that was investigating SNC-Lavalin, and him and the rest of the liberals filibustered, right? And he, I believe it was him that read the phone book out for the record, right? So to filibuster the vote. And, but he is this guy. If you go back and you watch any of the committee hearings on SNC-Lavalin, he is the most aggressive person on the committee. Like, he's very aggressive in just the way he talks, the way he handles himself. And it's almost like you kind of watch him and go, what is wrong with this guy?
Yeah, well, that's very true. And, well, it's infectious, unfortunately. So we'll wrap this segment up just with a couple more little bits of news about what's going on with the Alphabet crowd. And, well, Concordia University, that one of those universities that isn't that one of the ones that doesn't like English-speaking students? Was that one of the three?
Concordia in Quebec?
Yeah.
Well, they're an English-speaking school.
Yeah, that was the one with the increased tuition. Well,
yeah.
On top of an increased tuition, Concordia now plans to decolonize and indigenize their academics.
What does that mean?
I wish I knew what that meant, but I'm sure that it means settler colonialism bad and, well, indigenization good. I mean, I have no problem with bringing more indigenous culture into your academics, but I don't know what that means other than it sounds really woke.
Well, to me, it sounds like anything that has to do with the history of how Canada was founded is going to be erased from being taught. So kids aren't even going to learn about how Canada was even founded in the first place because it might offend their sensibilities. And what did you call it?
Indigenize
the teaching. So there's going to be an indigenous spin on everything that's being taught or what? Like they're not the only people who live here, right? Like, that's the thing that, like, whether you like how it happened or not, fact is, there's other people here other than Indigenous people. In fact, Indigenous people make up what? Something like, I think it's 5% of the population or 10% of the population. I think it's around 5% of the Canadian population is Indigenous. And we act like it's, like they're the prevalent culture in the country, and it's not. Like, let's stop pretending. I don't have any problem with, you know, teaching their culture or whatever in school, because it is important to understand, to know why what happened was, you know, wrong and all this, but what's done is done. Let's teach what happened because it's important to know history. Right?
Absolutely. So, and not to be outdone, of course, the University of Waterloo, speaking of small segments of the population, Black Canadians, or those identifying as Black, make up about 3% of the Canadian population. But the University of Waterloo has their backs and has created Black-only swim times in their pool, as well as alphabet-only swim times at the pool.
And, wait, is this the 1960s?
Well, that's what one commentator said, who happened to be a black-skinned fellow, said they say so that, you know, Black people can connect with their culture in the pool. And he said, I don't know if that means they don't think Black people can swim, or just that maybe Black people can learn to swim with other Black people. And he was quite confused by it, and I just thought, yeah, and he made the same argument you did. So are they going to make different water fountains for us at Waterloo as well? And he was a little put out by it, let's just say that.
Well, this just reeks of like 1960s Mississippi, you know? Like, I don't believe that Canada had like separate water fountains and all that kind of stuff like they did in the States, like in the Southern US. Like, we are regressing big time in this country.
Yeah, totally.
I mean, this is, oh my God, what a.
Yep. But the government also decided to buy into this, and we'll wrap the segment up on this one because it completely makes me shake my head. And for those of you who are Canadian Armed Forces veterans, and I know we have a few of those in our audience, the Canadian Armed Forces has decided as another recruiting tool to introduce drag queen bingo.
What?
Yeah. Drag queen bingo, because that is what's gonna boost recruiting numbers. The face tattoos, the purple hair, and drag queen bingo.
Drag queen bingo.
Yeah.
In the armed forces.
In the armed forces.
What's the point of that?
I wish I knew. I wish I knew.
Wow. I don't even know what to say to that.
Yeah, it's just you wonder why we have a recruitment problem.
Well, I can tell you why there's a recruitment problem, and it's because the military is so underfunded that nobody wants to even go in there and attempt to risk their life with the archaic guns and equipment that they're given.
Yeah.
And they thought they would solve the recruitment problem by saying, hey, if you have a criminal record, you can become you can join the military. If you have face tattoos, you can join the military. If you have purple hair, you can join the military. Does anybody think that anybody with purple hair is actually willing to join the military? Like, come on.
Yep. Oh, exactly. So let's move on and talk briefly about, well, Mother Corp, the CBC. Catherine Tate, who is the resident of New York City, but does happen to have a home in Canada because she has to in order to have the job.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah. Well, and we pay her $497,000 a year to be the head of CBC. Yes, that is indeed more money than the prime minister makes by, well, $150,000. But that's beside the point. She deserves that money. Not only does she deserve $497,000, she deserved a $100,000 bonus for the last year, even though there was, you know, 600 or 700 layoffs in CBC and their viewership is on the decline. She said in committee, she feels this is indeed warranted and she will not decline the bonus. Money well spent, I guess.
So the CEO of a corporation generally makes a lot more than $400,000+, right? Like they make millions normally.
Fair, yeah.
So being paid, you know, just under $500,000 to be the CEO of a television and radio media corporation, you're probably being underpaid. But are you being underpaid when your audience is as small as the CBC's audience?
Right. And Andrew Scheer actually got a good zinger on her in committee. And not that a lot of people watch committees, but Andrew Scheer is so good now. I mean, he was so weak as a leader of the Conservative Party, but geez, I almost want to see him back now because the way he's completely unafraid. So he was.
That's because he's retiring.
Well, yeah, probably. So he was questioning Catherine Tate about if she thought this was fair, and she said yes, she did think it was fair to take this bonus. And he said, okay, but your ad revenues are in decline, your listenership is in decline, your television audience is in decline. And he says, like, please tell me how you're relevant. So she pointed him out to him a poll that she was quoting, which said, no, 78% of respondents to this poll think that we are on the right track, and you know, they strongly support the CBC. So, Lewis, who was polled for this poll that 78% responded to?
Well, I believe she admitted that the polling was performed by the CBC of CBC listeners and viewers.
Indeed, it was.
So, what did she say? 79%?
78, yep.
78% of respondents believe they're doing the right thing. Well, 78% of 17 people is only 15 people.
Right. Yeah, so it's like the government saying we've investigated ourselves and we've done nothing wrong.
Yeah, no, it's pretty much the same thing. Yeah. Yep.
So we'll wrap this up by saying she is not alone, because April 1st, and this won't be an April Fool's joke, Canada, every member of parliament in Canada will give themselves an $8,000 salary bump. It's actually a 4.2% increase in their pay. An MP, a backbench MP who has no committee assignments, fresh off the election, will now have a base salary starting at $202,000 a year. More money well spent, Canada.
That sounds like an awful waste of money.
It really does. Yep, that's that is a lot of bank for a trained SEAL who's going to stand there and clap on the back of their desk or their chair.
Yeah, well, and this is something that I've said on the show many times. This is something I wholeheartedly believe in. I don't think that MPs should be allowed to vote themselves a raise until right before an election. I think that the last thing that the House votes on before an election is whether they get a raise or not after the election. And I think you'd see a lot less raises being given to themselves if they knew that if they voted for it, they're going to lose the election. Like, I think that, you know, I mean, it's hard to do when a government can fall anytime, but maybe there should be some kind of provision in there that when the government falls the very next day, they are in the House of Commons voting on whether they get a raise or not. And then the government is dissolved. I mean, I don't know how it would be accomplished, but I think that that giving MPs a raise should be an election issue.
Yeah, there's got to be some kind of call it quality control or whatever. Yeah, you're right. There's got to be some mechanism.
But I also think that, you know, things like term limits, like we talked about on the show before, would help that, right? Because the job would not be looked at as a career. It would be looked at as an honor, right? Like it's an honor to represent the people of my riding in Ottawa. But with the way things are, it's a career. Like these politicians, it's a career for them. They enter it looking at it as, well, as long as I keep getting reelected, I'm going to be here the rest of my working life. Right. And in some ridings, that's entirely possible. Like if you're in the GTA and you're a liberal, like chances are you can be elected for the rest of your life. If you're in Alberta and you're a conservative, you could be elected for the rest of your life. And so I was thinking about this after, remember I talked about it on the show where I said, I don't know how term limits would work in a country with a parliamentary system, where we have, you know, we could have minority governments and they fall at any time. Like, how do you have like an 8-year limit or whatever, right? Because you can't, because an 8-year limit might be in the middle of a term. Well, I think it should be 3 elections or 8 years, whichever comes first. Oh, right?
That's fair, yeah.
And I think that that would work. Like, you can only run it, so if there's a minority government and there's an election like every 2 years, well, guess what? You've only got 6 years to be an MP. But or if it's 2 majority governments in a row, well, that's 2 elections you get to be an MP for, and that's it, right? I think that that's a way to do it, and I think that it should apply to everyone, MPs, prime ministers, everybody. It should apply to 3 elections or 8 years, whichever comes first.
I like that idea, actually. That's that is good, because even in the case if it's 3 minority governments, they could still get 8 years out of it. hypothetically. So
yep, exactly. So, but I think that that's how it should work. And honestly, I mean, I'm sick and tired, and it goes for all MPs, conservative, NDP, liberal, all of them. I'm sick and tired of them making it a career.
Oh, totally. Yeah. All right. So, well, speaking of career politicians, let's touch on the Senate for a minute. I stumbled across this one just because that's how nerdy I am. There is a Senate bill right now, S-209. It is in the reporting stage. So goes from second reading to reporting to third reading. And after third reading is probably when they'll send it to the House so it can get consent. But anyway, S-209 is a bill to declare March 11th Pandemic Observance Day around Canada. Across Canada, sorry. And when I saw that, all I could think was they want to keep us afraid. They don't want us to forget that there was a pandemic. And a lot of people want to move on. So yeah, they don't want us to forget we are afraid. And I think, go screw yourselves, all of you.
I don't know a single person in this country that wants to remember 2020 to 2023. I don't know anybody who wants to remember it.
Right, exactly.
This was not like a Holocaust or a genocide of some kind where it was a government that annihilated people. Like, they didn't come in and start shooting people in the streets. This is not like some massacre that we need to have a remembrance day for. You know, this was a pandemic that was completely mishandled, and the restrictions and all that got out of control. Yes, there was a lot of problems on the government side, but this is not something that people want to be commemorating or remembering every year. Like, I am not even going to try to be funny on this or anything. I'm dead serious. Nobody wants to remember this.
No, they don't. And now, I did not see anywhere that said that should be a statutory holiday, and which is fine. I mean, because we have all kinds of observance days that are not. But yeah, I'm with you. I would just as soon move on. No, thanks. I don't need to be reminded how my freedoms were curtailed. It's okay.
Yeah, no, I mean, like, there's an important thing to remember about how our freedoms were removed, and how, you know, the government enabled the Emergencies Act, and how they forced us to take a vaccine that was not tested properly. There was virtually no data that even said that it worked. And that the pharmaceutical companies lied about its effectiveness, and governments lied about we were going to have a winter of death and all that because there was so many unvaccinated people. But this is not something that I think any Canadian wants to, you know, every year have a day where everything is on the news is broadcast. It's going to be like a remembrance day, right? And I just don't, this is a waste of money. It's a waste of time. And I really just, this shows that the Senate should be elected.
Totally. Yeah. Now you're going to have kids calling their senators needing consoling. Oh, wait.
Oh my God. Yeah.
So we'll move on from that little bit of idiocy and talk a little bit about housing. Now, in Kelowna, we had showed a video from Pierre Poilievre last summer of a tent city in Kelowna. And it was pretty shocking. So the city of Kelowna now has designated an area in their North End industrial, from what I was reading, where they're now going to be putting up some, well, they call it a tiny home community, but that is probably painting it with a bit of a nicer brush than it needs. What it is, they're bringing in some pallet shacks, the same pallet shacks that are being used in in Halifax right now for to help the homeless. It is basically a bedroom with, you know, privacy, obviously, but it's by no means a tiny home. They are pallet shacks that give somebody a warm, secure place to sleep. Fantastic. But the city or somebody is still going to have to come in and bring them, well, water, any kind of sanitation, whether it's porta potties or what have you. They still need food. They still would need access to, well, to detox or treatment for their addictions, et cetera, et cetera. So it's a Band-Aid. And yes, thank you, Kelowna, for, well, I guess moving the homeless population to one specific area. But why don't we stop with the Band-Aids and actually address the problems?
Yeah, I was just going to say, what these people need, I mean, maybe this is a good, you know, temporary Band-Aid while they get, before they get treatment or whatever, but they need help. They don't need, you know, to be corralled into a shanty town. They need help. They need rehab, and they need mental health treatment, and they need this now. That's what we should be focusing on. We should not be trying to focus on just providing them a roof over their head, because that is only a small part of the solution. If you help them get rehabbed and treatment and mental health help, you know, the roof over their head, they can solve that themselves, because they'll be in a position where they can get a job and they can make some money and have and rent a place or whatever. That's what they need. They need dignity. They need the help. They need the addiction help, and they need the mental health help. And nobody's giving that to them.
No.
And that's what they need most of all.
Yep, absolutely right. And to be fair, there are going to be some examples of people who are, say, living in their cars and have a job and just can't afford a place, who will benefit from these little shacks. That's a very small number of people. And
yeah, I was going to say yes, you're right. There are, but it's such a small percentage of it that it's almost not worth mentioning, because yeah, the overwhelming majority are mental health problems and addiction problems, and in most cases it's both.
Yeah, which is why there's always a pushback when the municipalities are, you know, erect these quasi-permanent structures like this. And I even read in Kelowna there's some pushback. There's a local courier company that actually got their terminal right close to where this village in Kelowna is going, and they said, well, we've already had problems with break-ins, etc. This is just going to make that worse. And yep, that's a problem a lot of these communities say, is like, okay, wherever they set up, that there always seems to be an increase in crime. And well, that's because of the addictions, folks. So like you said, Lewis, let's actually give them the help they need instead of just pretending we're doing something.
Yeah, the thing with crime is that crime is a byproduct of poverty. Right. And if you can help solve a lot of the poverty issues, then you're going to solve a lot of the crime issues. And now I'm not talking about, you know, communist style trying to make everyone equal stuff. That's not what I'm saying, because we all know that doesn't work. We all know that what that results in is that everybody becomes equally poor, except for the elite. Right. Otherwise, you know, like communism has never dragged anyone out of poverty. It just drags everyone into poverty. But what we do need is we need these, you know, the homeless population to get the help they need in terms of mental health and addiction help. That will solve the poverty issues. Maybe not 100%. Well, definitely not 100%. There's always going to be some homeless people, because there's going to be people who just can't stay on that road to redemption, and or that road to healing. But a lot of these people will be helped by it. And I mean, all you have to do is look at the way, the difference in the way that Alberta's treating their addiction and homeless situation and the way BC is, because BC and Alberta are treating it in completely opposite methods. And Alberta is having a way higher success than BC is. And they're dealing with it by treating the illnesses and getting the people the help they need. Whereas in BC, it's giving them more of what got them into this place in the first place.
Yeah. Oh, exactly. Right. So we'll wrap the show up talking about, well, a different kind of confinement. The city of Edmonton has, they've laid out a plan to show that you and I aren't crazy. Because when we talked about 15-minute cities, Lewis, I know there are some people out there who said we were conspiracy theorists. Yeah, that was it.
Yeah.
Like, this isn't going to happen. You guys are crazy. Well, as it turns out, I read the Western Standard, and the author happens to be a friend of mine, so at least I can trust his reporting, actually shows the chart that was sent out in an email blast by, a committee from Edmonton City Council, laying out their plans for the 15-minute cities in Edmonton. Now, it's easy for us to pick on Edmonton because we both know the city fairly well. We both lived there. And yeah, it's right here. Edmonton lays out its 15-minute city plans. And I thought, that's great, because of course they talk about it's all so wonderful because now people will be able to work, live, shop, and enjoy their local communities in a, of course, cycling or walking. You know, Edmonton just a few weeks ago was minus 50 degrees. I don't feel like I would want it to be walking around to go shopping at that point in time.
Yeah. Man, this sucks. When you mentioned Edmonton, I thought we were going to be talking about the Oilers.
And we still will, but let's talk about this first.
Okay. So these 15-minute cities, in theory, they sound nice.
It's community, right? It's a community of communities.
Yeah. But what this would lead to is you're going to probably have to get a permit to leave your designated area of the city to go to a different part of the city and all that kind of stuff. Right. I mean, that's the conspiracy to the nth degree. Right. If you've ever seen a movie called In Time, they have this, right? Like, if you want to leave one sector of the city for another sector of the city, you have to get permit. And for that permit, you have to have a certain amount of currency. In the movie, currency is time. But, you know, go watch that movie. It's a great movie. But this is, you can't build a northern Canadian city around cycling and walking.
Right? No, you really can't.
I mean, if anybody's ever been to Winnipeg in the winter or to Edmonton or Saskatoon, hell, I mean, let's not even go to the northern cities. Let's stay with the ones near the border, right? Like Calgary, Toronto. You can't, in the middle of winter, you can't cycle in these cities. You can't walk 15 minutes in these cities. You get frostbite. You know, like, this is not realistic. And Edmonton is just, yeah. I love Edmonton, by the way. I lived there for 5 years. I love Edmonton. I love the people in Edmonton. I much preferred Edmonton over Calgary, just to get that out of the way. But Edmonton has always had a bit of a problem with voting left-wing city councils and mayors.
Well, I mean, right from the article, this vision is for new and current residents to enjoy more housing, recreation, education, and employment opportunities in all of Edmonton's districts and to have more travel options within and across districts, the email explained.
Yeah, let's be honest about this, though. A large city, you already have all the shopping you need within 15 minutes of your house. You really do. The only thing that most people usually have to travel further away from their house than 15 minutes is for work. And how are you going to dictate that someone has to work within 15 minutes of their house?
Well, that's the thing. And they say I don't know how they would control that to say, oh, well, you mean they just said there would be employment opportunities within your district. Well, Edmonton is set up that there is a large industrial area. Well, there's a few different large industrial areas. They're not all together. So if you happen to be working on the south side, but you live on the north side, you're outside of your district. Now what? Well, maybe that job doesn't exist in the Northeast Industrial or the West End.
And you can't afford the houses in that area of town.
Right.
Right. Or you don't want to live in that part of the area of town because it's not as nice as the part of town that you do live in. Like, this is taking personal choice away from people. And that is something that we all have to be worried about because they took it away from us during COVID. They're going to take it away from us with 15-minute cities. They're taking it away from us with electric cars. Like, they're taking choice away from us.
Yeah, absolutely right. That's the city of Edmonton that you, our council, I should say, that you elected Edmonton. And as we said to Toronto, elections have consequences.
They do.
So let's actually talk about the others. And there's one more, more amusing note I want to wrap up on, but I'd actually asked you this because the Oilers are now at 16 straight wins and then they stopped for the All-Star break. And I just thought, God, I hope they can keep this up. I hope that didn't like kill the momentum because I'd love to see them get 18 just to set a record.
Yeah, well, people are focusing on the 16 straight wins, which, yeah, it's an incredible feat in the NHL. But the last, I believe, 27 games, they're 24-3.
Wow.
Yeah. So, I mean, they haven't lost to a Western Conference team since November 9th or something like that. Like it's an amazing winning streak that they're on right now. And at the All-Star weekend here that nobody watches, Connor McDavid just destroyed everybody. Like in the skills competition, he won everything. And I'm sure if he had strapped on the goalie pads, he would have won that too. like he just walked off over everyone. And it wasn't by like small margins. It was big margins. Like he won the shooting accuracy by half a second. And which in the shooting accuracy, that's quite a bit. The half a second's quite a bit. And then second place between the second and third was 4 seconds.
Wow.
So first and second were half a second apart. Second and third were 4 seconds apart. In the stick handling, he won by like 3 seconds. He is just proving to the world that he is like just so much better than everybody else. And I mean, he had, what was it? The NHL or Connor McDavid went to the NHL or the NHL went to Connor McDavid. I'm not sure which way, but, and said, how do we make the All-Star weekend more entertaining? And he said, you know, get rid of the dunk tanks and let's have actual skills competitions. Like for hockey, like what actually makes a hockey player good? So stick handling, skating, shooting, you know, all of these things. And they set up obstacle courses and everything, and the players had to stick handle the obstacle courses, and which they weren't easy either. And the NHL went, that's a great idea. And then he said, and then give the winner $1 million. And they went, that's a great idea. And then he went out and won it all and got $1 million.
Yeah. Yes, he did. Hey, that's good on him for doing that. Anyway, I'm actually fine with him winning $1 million because he actually earned it. And if it brings more people to watch, great. Cause I didn't watch it. I haven't watched the All-Star games for probably decades.
I haven't watched an All-Star game since I was a kid.
Yeah.
And it's mostly because the game always sucks. And the way they do it now is it's a bit of a tournament. It's a 3-on-3 tournament now. Like there's four teams, I believe. And so they have like a little tournament, right? But I still don't watch it because the game always sucks. The goalies don't try, right? Because they, how Draisaitl is always hanging out on the left-hand side of the goalie, and McDavid will pass the puck over to him and he'll one time it into the corner. Well, the goalies are in a regular NHL game, the goalies are like sprawling across the crease to try and make that save. But in the All-Star game, they just stand there and they don't even try to stop the shot because, you know, they don't want to get injured or anything like that over an All-Star game. The skills competition I've always enjoyed the skills competitions, and I'll always watch the highlights from them until the last few years. Because like when I mentioned dunk tanks, that's what they had last year. They had dunk tanks. The players had to shoot pucks at the target to drop another player into the water. Like,
jeez.
Like it was ridiculous. And that was in Florida, right? Well, of course they're going to do something stupid like that in Florida, right? But it's just, so I was happy to see the return of actual skills competitions. And I was even happier to see Connor McDavid just destroy everyone because, I think Connor McDavid might be the most talented player who's ever played. I think he might be more talented than Lemieux and Gretzky even. But Gretzky still, I believe, greatest player of all time. Lemieux, a close second. But Connor McDavid, I think, is can be definitely mentioned in the same breath.
Yeah, well, for sure he'll be in the conversation. Yeah, no question. So listener Merrick sent us a video last week when we were talking about Justin Trudeau being Fidel Castro's spawn. And so he sent us a Facebook message with a little video just saying, well, hey, here's a little more fuel for your fire. And thank you, Merrick. It was actually pretty good. And it just talked about how, well, you know, when the Trudeaus were vacationing in the Caribbean, there was one private trip to a secret island that wasn't disclosed to media. And then when they actually made their first official visit, you know, whatever it was, 2 years afterward or 3 years afterward, they seemed way too familiar when meeting, quote unquote, Fidel Castro for the first time. And then it said, how did Pierre Trudeau, the lifelong playboy, not father any children until he met, you know, Margaret Kempler or I can't remember what the heck her name was. But anyway, Margaret Trudeau, as she turned to be. And it's like, hey, you know what? That actually helped make our case pretty nicely. And then stumbled across another one from Canada Proud saying that, oh, no, this couldn't be. And tried to debunk it. And it was like, yeah, that was actually a really lame attempt. And I'm not convinced. So, Merrick, you just moved up a notch in our books. I like having more fuel to the fire that Trudeau was actually Fidel Castro's bastard son.
Well, I mean, it's a running joke on our show, obviously, but it's not that unrealistic. And I mean, all you have to do, like we said before, all you have to do is you just have to go back and look at photo comparisons of Fidel Castro and Justin Trudeau at the same age. And you tell me, you look at those pictures and you tell me that they don't look like the exact same person. Because when I first saw them, I thought that those pictures of Fidel Castro were doctored to make look like Justin Trudeau, and they're not. Like, those are actual photos of Fidel Castro at the same age as Justin Trudeau. And the other thing I wanted to mention is when they went to Cuba and they officially met Fidel Castro for the first time, Fidel Castro held Justin Trudeau. And there's pictures of it where he's holding this Justin Trudeau, this little baby Justin Trudeau. Hard to imagine that little baby would grow up to be this big buffoon. But there is a picture of him holding Justin Trudeau in his arms with Margaret Trudeau standing right beside him, looking at them lovingly. And have you ever seen a foreign leader hold the child of a visiting dignitary?
Boy, I have to think really hard about that. No, I don't, because I have never, ever seen that.
No, exactly. So,
Yeah, and in that photo, you're right. I mean, Margaret Trudeau is, I think she actually even has her hand on Fidel's shoulder, and she's looking at them with a smile, and Pierre Trudeau does not seem to be fazed one bit that Fidel Castro is holding this baby in his arms.
Yeah, and I believe there's actually a few pictures. I'm looking at them right now. I did a Google search and I'm just looking at them right now. There's several photos of Fidel Castro holding Justin Trudeau with Margaret just standing there looking with her head tilted and smiling, like looking at them all lovingly. And there's even a picture of Margaret. So here, I'm going to show you this picture here. He's looking at a photo album. Fidel Castro is looking at a photo album, and Margaret Trudeau has her hand on one shoulder and her other hand on his other arm. It's just way too comfortable. Way too comfortable. And I mean, and here we go again. Here's another picture of him holding Justin Trudeau. Like, there's so many pictures of him holding Justin Trudeau, and they're not all from one instance. They're all from the same trip, but they're all at different times. Why would he be holding this kid so much?
Well, especially if there was no, you know, friendly relationship between them. If it's just literally foreign dignitaries, you're right. They're way too comfortable.
Yeah. Yeah, way too comfortable. So just, you know, this is just to let everyone know that the jokes are going to keep coming.
Exactly. Yep, they are. We will be relentless with our Trudeau is Castro comparisons. Don't worry.
Yeah.
You'll get more of that. All right, Canada, we're going to wrap it up there for you. And we do want to thank you so much for joining us. And until next week, it is Tony in Saskatchewan.
And Lewis out here in BC. Go Oilers.
Go Oilers. Good night, Canada.
Good night.